It's time for the first hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future program.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, planetary humans. What a warm day today. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we're going to have to evolve to be able to handle hotter temperatures, I guess, in the future.
You think?
Yeah. Maybe we need to grow some skin air conditioning.
Well, it's funny you mention that. I've been reading an old science fiction book called The Voyage to Arcturus, which is just about that very idea.
Really?
Yeah, more in a minute. But hey, Bobby, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
All right. Are you getting hot broiling temperatures in San Fran, too?
You know, it's 99 degrees.
Oh, that's even hotter than it is here. Wow. It was 94 as we were driving here to the station.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. It was cool yesterday. I mean, it was perfect.
This is bathing suit weather.
For June 21st, we're baking. June 21st, the summer is here.
Yeah, okay.
We're in the summertime.
I like it. Bacon. Yeah.
We'll go for a swim after the show.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of having the ocean so close, eh?
Yeah, it's the only time of year it looks good to me.
Yeah. So that's good news. The sad news for us is that we've been losing more friends lately. You know, it's just been an amazing number of friends who have just been passing in the last little while for us.
You know, Michael Zwirling once told us that KSCO stands for Keeping Senior Citizens Occupied.
Yeah, better occupied than not.
Right. Well, but I wonder if we're entering that phase where so many of our friends are just a little bit ahead of us on the time scale
and
we're going to be saying goodbye.
It seems quite a few drop around 70, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
One of our friends who died this weekend was 75, a massive heart attack.
Yeah.
Oh. J.J. Webb, dear friend.
And his heart attack may well have come about from a power shortage.
Yeah, well, that was going on in Boulder Creek at the same time, a big power failure.
Yeah.
JJ's been on the show. He was one of the pioneering NASA space probe guys. He had helped create the lenses for the Viking 1 lander.
Yeah.
Which
went to Mercury? Where did it go?
It went to Mars.
Mars. Oh, yeah, the original Mars probe.
Mars mission in the 70s, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was involved with the computer grinding of the lenses.
Right. Yes. In the era when computers were just coming into being and only the geeks and the nerds even knew they existed, JJ was hacking together a system to perfect the grinding of lenses so that they could be accurate enough to serve as our eyes in space.
Tinsley Lab in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. With the subcontractor at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll miss him. He was a big fixture for the Boulder Creek Poetry Society.
That's right. He hosted it. He had the Poetry Grove at his home where some of us were lucky enough to perform and attend some very epic celebrations of poetry.
Oh, big time.
Which he hosted around his favorite redwood tree, who he named Shakespeare.
Yes. And part of our heritage with him was putting up our first website.
Yes.
He had been one of the first persons to actually design things for the web that we knew.
That's right. He was partners with Chris Nicholson of cruiseio.com at the time and helped launch that enterprise in the very early days of cruiseio.
It was early days. We all had websites at cruiseio.
And what was it before then? It was the Internet Music Underground, right? That was the big internet hub for people.
Yeah. Also Usenet. Usenet was before the internet, per se.
Right. Yeah. And I think you found a clip of JJ being interviewed by Luke Sala and talking about the early bulletin boards, like the Fido Nets, even.
Yes, yeah. Right? It was before the internet, there were the zines, and then the bulletin board systems. People were running them in their closets all over the world.
That's right.
The
original nerd net.
Your internet online zine.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that. San Francisco.
I was using the FidoNet in the early days before the web. I had a typesetting business and was involved in printing books, and I had to do the coding myself. I had to type in the actual commands that told the typesetter to make a certain phrase bold. So I had to go into the copy. I had to type the copy. But first I had to type the command that said, make what's coming up next bold, you know?
The early days of desktop publishing.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, really early.
Yeah. Yeah, the beginning of the Macintosh and the laser printer and all that.
Oh, all of those things were epic. Those came in the mid-80s, you know?
Right.
That came much later.
Yeah. Fascinating. Uh-huh. Were you involved with desktop publishing, Bobby?
Yeah. One of my clients was Citibank Private Banking in the 80s. Yeah. And their big thing was getting off Wang computers.
Oh, Wangs, yeah.
They had like mainframe, well, mini frame.
Yeah, they had dedicated machines just for doing word processing and such.
Exactly.
Database management. And,
so yeah. I was responsible for taking them off of that. And there was something called Multimate, which emulated Wang, but on a PC.
Ah.
And then we later got laser jets and tried to do like really nice word processing on nice paper and things
that
like
was
that.
The PC side of the equation as opposed to...
That was really the beginning of the computers going from being these centralized resources that were hubs for big organizations to being decentralized resources that created the desktop publishing revolution that allowed anyone who got themselves a computer to become a publisher. Mm-hmm. That's really what changed publishing
became
in our lifetime.
A decentralized phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the new Gutenberg press. You know,
right, everyone has a press.
Yeah, right. That's our era, people.
Yeah, it seems to me that we might go back to some elements of that now that everything's getting censored. Like, for example, we just put together a big memorial for another friend, Michael Gosney, who had passed. And a number of pieces of music were used, which YouTube will not allow us to put on because they're copyright.
Yeah.
And yet, they are the pieces of music that had the emotional impact that everyone wants to experience.
From that era, you know, music is definitely something unites people, that we all share that generational memory.
And to be banned from playing the music that you love and know and had an impact emotionally on you?
Well, and in a fair use context, like a memorial for someone who died.
Yeah, why is that not allowed?
It's because the AIs aren't smart enough to know the difference.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you think we have the permissions, but the AIs that YouTube are using are too dumb to know.
Yeah, I do think the AIs are too dumb to know.
A blunt instrument for
just
editing.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The person programming the AIs to find the music wasn't paid to make it smart enough to know if it's a fair use or not.
Yeah, I hope you're right in that. It's not just a blatant ban, because it really bugs me.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to a break and then get into some of our stories, shall we?
You bet.
All right.
Okay. Dr. Mrs. Future and Bobby B. Wilder. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Some of our space news this week. The FAA has imposed environmental actions on SpaceX for their Texas Starship launches.
Oh, and Starship is the BFR, the big F rocket.
That's right. That's right. The one that's going to take us to Mars eventually. But meanwhile, we'll be able to deliver much bigger satellites for the Starlink network.
They had some remarkable test flights when you saw this thing go up in the air and then they just free falls back and tries to straighten itself out so it can land. It was pretty scary.
Some spectacular explosions too, I might add.
Yeah.
Which is why the FAA has been on their case. They have to take steps to reduce wildlife and plant damage,
impact.
Protect fish, reduce beach and park closures in the area. And they're one step closer to it. They've agreed to a lot of the details of this. And it looks like they're going to move forward. But its environmental impact is a big deal these days. And we can't ignore it except with big things like rocket launches.
Mm-hmm.
They also have to pay attention to national security concerns and insurance requirements and overflight over populated areas. And in case of payload dumps over populations, they have to be aware of that.
You know, it just goes to show you, in Texas, they are very actively involved in their local government there, where they invited Elon to come down there and start launching the rockets from Bogachita. And now that he's down there, they're like, well, sir, you got to make sure the locals are pleased with what you're doing.
And you have to hire a wildlife biologist for monitoring of vegetation and wildlife issues.
Right. A local advocate for the wildlife. As a environmentalist, I'm actually pleased that there's somebody advocating for nature there. I think that's the way of the future.
Well, nature and also the potential engine noise and sonic booms from the launches for the local populace in the area.
I wonder if they'll have some kind of news report, like boom warning, like, okay, everybody put on your headphones between 10 and 12. There's going to be a launch.
Yeah, they're going to have to let people know, you know, when they're breaking the sound barrier and such. They have to coordinate with the state and federal agencies to remove launch debris from sensitive habitats. So if they drop some stuff in the swamps, they have to pick it up.
Sure. Yeah, you know, that makes sense.
They have to adjust the lighting of the launch complex to minimize its impact on wildlife.
They don't want any blaring security lights at night confusing the local
creatures. Well, I have to think about it.
Creatures. You
know, think about how it's going to affect the habitat and also people on the beach. This is just one part of the FAA launch operator license application that they need to deal with.
I don't think this is that different than what any airport has to do.
No, it's just that rockets have their own
higher degree because thing, it's, you know, bigger, more explosive, louder, all that.
But, and this is a big rocket. This is like the Saturn V, you know, size rocket. You know, it's
I forget
monster.
How many. I think it holds like 10 Falcons or some ridiculous number. It's huge.
But it's going to get
it's like a 40-story hotel. Something like that.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's going to really allow the Starlink network to be more quickly built. The initial constellation for the low Earth orbit internet network has to be 11,000 satellites, and they're only up to about 1,600 right now.
After how many years of launching 60 at a time?
Yeah, it takes a while. They did 3 launches last week, by the way.
Oh.
It's all done in the Falcon 9, and they can get maybe 50 or 60 sats up at a time. But with this, they'll be able to do hundreds at a time.
Right. Wow.
So
this is the rocket that they want to send to Mars, and then they want it to land on Mars and be the local Earth hotel for the people who are arriving at Mars start colonizing.
You live in your rocket before you build the habitats out.
That's right. So they have to make sure.
Hey, you're going to be living in that rocket for 9 months.
I better put it in a gym.
It's got everything. It's like a hotel, at least the Mars version of it. Right now, it's going to be
bare bones.
More of a supply ship kind of thing.
Now they're just
cargo.
Like the folks over at, what's it called, SLS? Everybody's
Space
just trying
system.
To make sure that the rocket launches and lands okay.
Oh, yeah, that's the other big, of course, we do have a giant rocket that we're paying for through NASA that's also been going through testing lately, too.
Oh, and is that why everything's so inflated?
And that's called the SLS. I believe that stands for Space Launch Systems. And NASA had their new rocket on the pad to do a test down to T-minus 9 seconds this weekend.
Yeah, we keep hearing about how this is the launch that has been delayed now. I think that was the fourth time because they're billions of dollars over budget because they screwed up on their rocket fuel delivery system and then they had to reinvent it. And now there's some leaky seal where the old rocket system doesn't hook up with the new one and it might catch the whole rocket
on
fire.
Well, no, you're making it sound worse than it is. You know, it really is. It was out on the pad. They just rolled that out a few days ago, and it was very successful. They had a long day for the team. They had some problems to overcome. 14 hours on Monday, they largely succeeded in what they called the fueling test, where they loaded hundreds of thousands of gallons of liquid oxygen and hydrogen into the first and second stages of the rocket. They did have a little leak, that they needed to
fix. Yeah, they passed the test because they removed a sensor that was checking whether or not hydrogen fuel leak was happening before they ignited the rockets.
Yeah, it was. You got to expect little problems, when you're doing
Don't tell
stuff.
The sensors what's going on. This is just a test. Don't worry. We'll fix that in post.
It was a wet dress rehearsal.
Right. This is fuel only. No fire.
Yeah, they're working out the kinks, and that was one of the kinks. So they got it down to T-minus 29 seconds with an original target of T-minus 9.3 seconds. So that was pretty good. Pretty good. They got it down.
Just got to fix that hydrogen fuel leak.
Yeah. The test ended just prior to igniting the 4 main engines. They weren't planning on lighting the engines either, I might add.
No, I wouldn't either if there was a hydrogen fuel leak.
Skepticism is fine, but this case, it's a minor thing.
You know, I really need to work on how critical I am. I should be more positive.
Yeah, you should be. This is a multi-billion-dollar thing, and it's looking pretty good overall.
Yeah, it used to be less billions, though.
Yes, it used to be less.
Oh, I'm sorry. There I go, spouting again. Critical information instead of praise.
Would you rather spend this on weapons to the Ukraine?
No, I don't think we should be doing that either. Our government has more ways to waste money. And of course, money itself, now that it's going digital, is so ephemeral. You know, it comes and goes. I mean, we can just make it up at the speed of thought.
So don't worry about it.
What, me worried?
Yeah. The main thing here is that the handful of technical problems that occurred were solved. And the most significant was, as you say, the hydrogen leak. And it was a hydrogen leak and a quick disconnect at the bottom of the mobile launch tower that supports it during the fueling. It was a 4-inch hydrogen line, and one of several, I might add.
Why do I have this impression of somebody, like, when they're lighting dynamite, and somebody's got the lighter and has to go to the fuse and has to light the fire and then run away and get behind the rock before it blows up?
Because you've watched too many cartoons.
Okay. All right. I hope that's not what's going on. It sort of sounds like it, though.
No, it's not. It's not a Roadrunner comic. This is a groundside computer that they were supposed to be dealing with the leaky seal that needed some help. Anyway, they liked what they saw. It's the first time they've been able to fully
test
the rocket to this extent, and it's looking like a go. Once they fix that leaky hydrogen seal, they'll be rolling it back into the vehicle assembly building to install what they call the flight termination system, which will preclude a launch attempt before the end of September.
Okay.
At the earliest, you know.
Maybe they'll do an actual launch in September. But so, right now, they're studying the data.
Yeah. So my understanding is that this is the alternative, at least in terms of U.S. technology, to the SpaceX.
The BFR.
Yeah, the spaceship. I think it's called
Starliner. No, that's a different one.
Starship.
Right.
Yeah. So those are the two big ships that are involved. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the International Space Station.
Oh, yes. Speaking of other space news.
They had to dodge some debris.
Oh, man. Again?
Yeah.
Is this thing in a collision course?
No. Last November, the Russians were testing their anti-satellite missile system and used the missile to blow up some space junk, an old satellite.
So much for the no weapons in space idea, huh? The early days are over. No, Camelot is retired.
That's not
we
even...
We now have weapons in space. We need to destroy satellites, make sure our weapons can do that.
This was a technology from Earth to destroy stuff in space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in case there was
dangerous... Oh, so we don't have any official weapons in space yet.
But we can launch debris from
weapons on the planet.
We can launch ground-based missiles to destroy space objects.
Nobody thinks that's a dumb idea yet.
No, well, they're starting to now. I mean, because when they hit it, it blew it up all right, but it blew it into 1,500 pieces.
Oh, there you go.
Hitting in all different directions.
Yeah.
And one of the pieces was big enough to scare the folks involved with the International Space Station.
Oh.
And so they had to move the space station by doing a 4-minute blast with one of the Soviet rockets attached to the...
Oh, good thing the space station has some thrusters that still work.
Well, it belongs to a Soviet Cosmos spaceship that was connected to the space station.
Oh, really? So a Russian spaceship launched some thrusters to move the ISS out of the way of the Russian debris coming from their test.
The engines of the Russian Progress MS-20 transport cargo ship carried out an unscheduled maneuver to avoid a dangerous approach to the ISS with a fragment of the Cosmos 1408 spacecraft.
Well, I guess you could call that responsible.
Yes,
they're taking responsibility for their space junk.
Yes, fired 4 minutes and 34 seconds to move the space station away from the fragment. Their radar indicated that would have been with less than half a mile from the space station, and that would have been very nasty if it had hit.
Mm.
But the crew was not in danger, and the station went on with business as usual.
Mm. You know, we used to have this treaty called MAD, Mutually Assured Destruction, was the reason for detente.
Right.
This is mutually assured dents in your satellite from junk in space.
Mishian sure did. Let me think about that. Jeez, Mishian sure did. All right, we'll be back after the break. Okay, welcome back to the show. It's going to be very interesting. For the second hour, we're going to be having a fairly unusual political discussion for our show with a special guest, Michael Sammet, coming in. And I think you'll love to hate him.
Well, about 5 years ago, he used to be the Monday
He was the What's Left
show.
Guy.
He was the What's Left guy, right?
Yeah, and he's really excited about the whole January 6th event and wants to tell us about why he's so thrilled with the whole thing.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for that. That's after 3. But right now we have some more news for you. But first we're going to take a phone call.
Okay. Let's say hello to Don in Prunedale. Hi, Don.
Hey, Don.
Hey, hi. You guys sound very intelligent to me. And I have a question on CO2s. Is that a problem or not?
CO2 gas?
Yeah, what they call...
carbon dioxide in terms of the environment, right?
Right, because it's, it's less than, 1% of what we breathe, 78% nitrogen, 17-18% oxygen, and 3% inert gases.
You know, Don, I can tell you, we have had guests on both sides of this issue. We have a physicist named Nick Herbert who has said that the fractional percentage of CO2 in the air doesn't pose the threat that's being billed. And we've had a climate scientist who teaches climate science in school and has gone down to the South Pole to investigate certain assumptions about the weather and the heating of the planet, believing that the tipping point is real and that CO2 is the factor. So we cultivate conversations here. I don't really have myself the scientific background to know whether the threats that our planet faces are caused by CO2 or not.
Okay, if CO2 is a problem, isn't it true that the United States produces less than 10% and that California is less than 1%?
It's true. Yeah, well, I think that in terms of having consciousness about the issue, California has been ahead of the game in air pollution control for a long time, whether it's related to climate change or not. The idea that we don't want to be breathing machine carbon toxins in our lungs because it's bad for our health is sort of a no-brainer. It's just not how the thing is advertised these days.
Correct. I thought of a question there, and you made me forget it.
Sorry. I have long thoughts.
Sorry. We'll be doing some shows on this in the near future, too.
I know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, if we went all electric, 50% electric tomorrow, trucks, cars, we would starve to death before the end of the year.
Is that a fact? Well, I don't know. I just know that the carbon overload is caused mainly by fossil fuel burning, coal, oil, and gas. And
is cutting, it really fossil fuel?
Yeah, and cutting down and burning forests as well. Those are all major factors.
Is our oil fossil fuel?
Yeah, well, it is, yeah.
You don't think it's organic, like plant life and...
Well, there's the abiotic theory, that it is constantly being generated.
I mean, I've seen elephants die in Africa, and within a week, they're totally eaten by the insects in the area, or bugs.
Uh-huh, So you think your things are just fine, do you? You think it's just, we just keep on going, and we'll be okay?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah? Okay. Well, that's a fair hypothesis, though. Though I do think that it's a good idea not to soil the nest that we're in and do our best to keep our nest clean and tidy.
I'm totally in favor of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in terms of worrying about the bigger issues, who really knows? I think it's complicated. The weather climate models are way more complex than even our supercomputers can really handle. So yeah. I think there's a lot, the jury's still out on a lot.
We live off the grid and we cultivate our electricity with solar power and batteries and diesel backup. And I think that is a really good system, and I think it's less polluting than a lot of other things. Now, if every single person did it the way that we do it, would that net out as more advantageous than the way that it's currently managed? I don't know.
But
it's
hard to say. I do know there are more and more effective and less polluting technologies coming along, and that we should take advantage of our genius in figuring new things out.
And meanwhile, right. the policies yeah. around controlling fossil fuels are really big multinational power play conversations, because World War I, World War II, these were all military fossil fuel control issues, where the Japanese entered World War II because we were not selling them fuel anymore. And we were right. doing that because we didn't want them to fuel their weapons. So, you know, fossil fuels is such a bigger conversation than should we be going more electric, or should we be trying to get everyone to stop using fossil fuels. Elon Musk thinks that if we got all transportation to be solar electric, we could use the fossil fuels for just the things that we need it for, like getting off the planet. So, you know, it's such a complicated conversation. There's so many aspects to it.
My first year of weather school was in Monterey, and the price of gas that I paid for premium was 30 cents. This was 32, yeah. but I got a discount because I worked for the cab company.
And them was the days, huh?
I remember the price of fuel when I finished my Air Force meteorology school, but I'm sure it was a little bit higher, and I was in Biloxi. There's an Air Force school there in Biloxi, Mississippi that I attended, and I ended up maxing the final exam on weather.
Uh-huh. Well, we did.
So you, with your background in weather, do you believe that carbon emissions are a significant factor in our weather?
There's zero effect.
Okay.
In fact, we need more carbon. We have to figure out a way to make carbon grow. Our plants are needing on it. If we had more carbon, we'd have plants and crops that you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, you can say that. But then there was also the runaway greenhouse effects that happened to Venus, which turned a very nice planet into a hell world. And we really don't want to see that happen, you know?
But isn't that contributed to being a little bit closer to the sun?
A little bit, but it's complicated. I'm sure it's not exactly as what is going on here, but at the same time, some of our scientists have said that's a distinct possibility that we should avoid.
How can we cool the planet?
And one of the ways is just not to soil our nest as much as we can. There are better ways of generating energy that we have come up with. Let's use them. Let's, you know, let's not...
Yeah. Let's cooperate with nature and make our environment more comfortable for everyone,
I've got one really great new technology that turns small creeks and canals into mini hydroelectric dams.
Oh, yeah, let's switch to that. We've got a great article on that,
Don. Yeah, it's amazing.
Do you know, we have articles at...
Orville, I saw the dam being built.
Oh, yeah?
Where?
Orville, California. It's a little town with a big reservoir. When the reservoir was built, it was the largest earth-filled dam in the world, and during construction, the Russians attacked it twice.
These new technologies are decentralized. They're smaller than the big projects of the past, but they allow neighborhoods to generate their own power.
Yeah. So, Don, what Dr. Future is directing our attention to is website, we publish links of really interesting articles that give us hope for the future and have really great ideas.
Yeah, it says a whirlpool turbine that can be installed in a week and can power up to 60 homes.
Is there any way, though, that we could do what France does and build small nuclear plants?
Well, that's an option on the board, and there are new nuclear plants that are less polluting and run by using old nuclear fuel, which is kind of interesting, too. So, yes, we can look at that as another option. There are amazing options evolving.
We'll not let a windmill being built because of environmental impact.
Well, there's environmental impact on everything we do, and windmills have theirs. I'm sure this whirlpool turbine has its influence too. But that's why we have programs to train scientists to think about environmental impact these days and have them as part of the team that decides what's next.
And does that help train eagles from getting egg-beatered in those
turbines?
Yeah. Well, I know they've been putting sound effects on them and lighting effects and such. But also, I don't agree with them having to be so big. I think we can have smaller ones that are more decentralized. Those are all the issues today. The idea of having centralized power plants is something that is questionable at this point in time.
Well, if we had nuclear, we'd also have water.
Well, everything has its pros and cons, and I must say the new nuclear options are worth considering, and we really should look at those more closely for sure. I wouldn't disagree with you on that.
All right, listen, Don, we've got another caller. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
It's really good hearing from
yeah.
you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Hello, Jeff from Cheyenne, Wyoming. It says you're clean. What does that mean, Jeff?
Yeah. Did you say I'm clean?
That's what your note says on my board here. This call screener wrote that you're clean.
Oh, okay.
It was a clean signal,
listen,
probably.
I'm a long-haul driver. I'm all over the country.
Uh-huh.
And I see the wind turbines and the solar panels, and apparently they work. But I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Your last name, is it the futures, or are you referring to the future of our current state of environment? I'm just wondering, because you have a radio show platform, and I'm going to ask you a pointed question.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be sarcastic, but where do you see Santa Cruz in 5 years? You just mentioned that you like to keep your area tidy and clean and environmentally nice, but I go sailing. When I come home, it's every 4 months. My best friend has a sailboat in the harbor, and we come into Santa Cruz, and I am just appalled at the garbage and the complete lack of accountability for keeping anything clean. It's like, oh, my God, I'm all over this country. I see it all. But I'm wondering, since you're calling yourselves the futures, where do you see Santa Cruz in 5 years, 10 years?
All right. This is a great question, Jeff, and we're going to put you on hold for a minute and talk about it over the break, and we'll be right back, okay? Hang tight.
All right.
Okay, welcome back to the show. I'd like to see Santa Cruz become even more of a model community in terms of alternative energy, in terms of cleanup. Yes, there are cleanup problems, and there are better ways that could be done. I don't know about what's going on at the yacht harbor, but I have friends there. I will ask them about that, and perhaps we can find out. Putting our attention with the intention of creating a better scenario is what I like to see. I'd like to see the rail corridor actually become a functional, if not just for bikes, for possibly small transportation devices.
But so where do you see Santa Cruz in 5 years?
I think we'll have more decentralized technology. I think these whirlwind hydro generators could be a big part of it. I think water from the atmosphere would be really big here, because we have a lot of fog and we could get a lot of water from the atmosphere with these new technologies. Also, there's decentralized desalinization, which would also provide more water for us, which is a big issue. Meanwhile, I'd like to see more sensors tracking the wildlife, and from that be able to see how we can create it so that they have a better experience themselves. And while at the same time, us having better transportation needs. I think we are one of the leaders in eVTOL aircraft. That's going to be a huge thing, 2024, 2025, that will change the world. The eVTOL craft will be flying to all the Bay Area airports from Monterey Airport, I believe it would be the first one. And that's the Joby Aviation here in Lovely. I'm very excited about that. That's the autonomous robot craft will be next, which will make transportation as easy as communication is today, and how communication changed over the last 25 years to being free and easy globally. Transportation has the same potential ability, and then we can be a model community in creating such a scenario.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
And in terms of jumping in the water, you like to body surf, but
yeah.
Other than that,
clean
you're
water,
not really...
I think we shouldn't have the water polluted. We should have clean water. We should have good experiences for all of our citizens in the ocean and in hiking and clean air. For the atmosphere, I think more citizen science programs are needed. Like every time you see a chemtrail, we should be able to aim a laser mass spectrometer at it and see what it's made out of so that we know whether or not it's really polluting or not. We have the capacity for doing those sorts of things. I don't believe in the antagonistic relationship between the community with its government. I think there should be more of a synergy between the two.
Nice. All right. So let's start with trying to create more goodwill so that people are willing to talk to each other, so that people are willing to work together, so that we're not always attacking a headless monster enemy, and sometimes we're cooperating
with
friends. Yeah,
I don't think we need enemies in order to make progress.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty rebellious attitude in this modern troll culture. All right, so you wanted to get to some more stuff. Jeff, thank you for the call.
Yeah.
And we've got to squeeze a few more things here in
okay.
the last
I wanted to play this one thing. There's some breakthroughs happening in the world of virtual reality, and I have a minute piece from none other than Zuckerberg himself, who revealed Meta's latest prototypes of VR headsets. Just to show you how complex this whole arena is, just listen to what he has to say about the next generation headsets. Check this out.
Today, I want to show you four VR research prototypes that we're working on to invent displays that are as vivid and realistic as the physical world, and much more advanced than traditional computer screens we use today. First, we need retinal resolution, and that means getting up towards, you know, about 60 pixels per degree. So we built Butterscotch. That's this prototype that lets you comfortably read the smallest letters on an eye chart. Second is focal depth. Normal monitors are a set distance away, so you just focus in one place. But in VR and AR, you need to be able to focus on things that are very close and very far from you.
Just like reality.
With parafocal and eye tracking tech, our halftone prototypes let you focus on any object at any distance. We also need to fix optical distortions in software so quickly that it's imperceptible to the human eye. Next is high dynamic range. Nature is often 10 or 100 times brighter than modern HD TVs and the highest end monitors. And we need those colors to be just as vivid to feel realistic. So we built Starburst, the first HDR VR system that we know of. The goal is to fit all of these technologies into a device that is lighter and thinner than anything that currently exists. So we built Holocake 2, a working experimental device using holographic displays that can already play PC VR experiences. Now, there's still a long way to go, but I'm excited to bring all this tech to our products in the coming years.
Okay, there you go. That's a little bit about the new HDR displays that are coming down the tubes.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that'll be relatively inexpensive. And there'll be a magical point where our technology creates a simulation as good as reality. And at that point, things get rather silly putty-ish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what about that other article you have about the sonic levitation of matter?
Yes, that was very interesting. Thank you, Gabrielle, for sending that in. Yes, one of the things that we know is that you can levitate using sound waves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We've known that for a while.
Yeah, and they do that by having some geometrical relationship of the sound generators that
creates something that lifts objects. Before you had a beam that you could aim at something and cause it to lift. But if you interrupted that beam of sound, you can interrupt the levitation experience. It blocks it if you put your hand in front of it, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So the scientists at University College London have developed a way to keep objects levitated by sound waves while other objects interfere with the levitation path, and it still levitates.
Mm-hmm.
A major breakthrough. They published that just this last week in the journal Science Advances, and it's a self-correcting levitation system. And as you said, instead of just having like a beam aimed at an object, you surround the object with beams. And if one gets interrupted, the others make up for it and are able to keep it levitating.
Yeah, and they're describing it as a hologram, even though it's made with sound instead of light. But the nature of it is that you've got different sound beams that are hitting each other and creating a reinforceable pattern. And there's some measurement going on from above and below so that the beams are constantly correcting to keep their surface keep their quality of being able to levitate
keep it balanced. They printed a 3D white rabbit as an interference object. Objects were levitated around the rabbit, regardless of its location.
Yeah, and the object that they levitated was a little water droplet.
Yeah, they levitated beads around the rabbit that had formed into a flying butterfly.
Right.
And they also levitated a piece of clear fabric that was used as a screen for projection of the rabbit.
Really interesting, because what they did with that screen of fabric is they actually rotated it perpendicular to the rabbit, and in that rotating screen, they projected a picture that looked like a 3D object floating above the solid rabbit below.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Right. So that's how they're going to try and do AR,
yeah,
is by introducing visual images of objects in some kind of space that you can have real objects interacting with them.
I also like the way they levitated a real drop, a single drop of water over a glass of water. And that showed how that system could work, even when that interfering object was a jiggling glass of liquid. So what are you going to use this for? Well, initially, it's going to be used for demonstration purposes in museums and advertisements to show things off.
Just to amaze people.
Yeah. Then they'll expect to expand their system to allow it to handle multiple interfering objects at the same time. So you can have several objects levitating.
Okay.
And maybe working together to form some kind of machine process. You know, so multitasking.
Sort of like astronauts in space.
Well, I've always
having
imagined
a sword fight.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, games, fun games. But I think that practically we want to be able to levitate objects, you know, like for loading, for shipping.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to be levitated yourself?
If I was in a dangerous situation, like in the middle of a wildfire and an aircraft could come by and levitate me out of there, I would be very happy.
You have to have your levitation boots with you.
I wouldn't want to lose my hearing over it, you know. So a lot of these details need to be thought about. But yeah, I think levitation would be a very handy thing for our species to have as a tool in our lifting capacities.
All right.
You know, well, it's always been something in our imagination, you know, levitation.
Very interesting idea.
Yeah.
All right, we're down to just about a minute.
Don't you want to be levitated?
Sure. That sounds fun. I always wanted to try that sky dancing where they've got that chamber above a jet engine where they blow air and you can sort of fly. And
oh, yeah. The ice sky, I think it was
ice sky, yeah.
That was fun.
Never quite made it to that. I'm not sure there's still happening, but I thought it was very cool.
Okay. Well, in this next hour, if our guest is here, we'll find out in a minute.
He's at the door.
He
I
is?
See him.
All right. Good. Yeah. Good. We're going to have a nice, rousing political discussion. Very unusual on the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Bobby Wilder.